Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to a new episode of ModPath Chat. I'm pleased to be joined today by Dr. Rohit Mehra from the University of Michigan. Rohit is a friend and a clinical professor of pathology at Michigan Medicine, where he serves as the GU service line director for MLabs. I like the name, MLabs. He is also the director of the MCTP, Esoteric Clinical Laboratory Services, and some of the product of that lab is what we're going to be discussing today. So today we'll be discussing his team's recent publication in Modern Pathology, identifying TRIM63 as a novel marker for MITF renal cell carcinoma. Thank you, Rohit, for accepting my invitation.
Thank you, George, for this invitation. And it is my distinct pleasure and privilege to be here today. And we are very excited to share our findings again after this publication in Modern Pathology. Thank you.
Excellent. It's really a cool study. And I think it serves as a model how you can develop new markers for entities that pose a difficult question like translocation carcinoma or MITF family renal cell carcinomas. So tell me, how did you go about doing the study? Why you did it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it exactly stems from what you said. I echo what you're saying that I think sometimes these uncommon or relatively rare renal tumors can be diagnostically a challenge. And they can sometimes show so much overlap with the common entities like clear cell RCC, clear cell papillary RCC. And I think it is important to have, if possible, some biomarkers which we can sort of annotate to each distinct tumor subtype. And based on the genomic work we have done at our hospital in Department of Pathology at MCTP, we have tried to develop a pipeline to interrogate diverse renal tumors. And as part of this pipeline, for the purposes of this study itself, we interrogated and looked at the RNA-based transcriptome for a subset of MITF renal cell carcinoma. And we had about 14 cases where we looked at specifically their transcriptome and we compared that to genomic findings of about close to 1,000 TCGA kidney cancer cases, which have been profiled by the TCGA. And we also compared them to 50 in-house rare kidney cancer subtypes which have been profiled by us at MCTP. So that was our overall sort of data set to begin with. Based on this uh, transcriptome comparison, we were able to nominate a subset of markers which are both overexpressed as well as underexpressed, specifically in MITF-RCC compared to other kidney cancer subtypes. And amongst these markers, there were three top candidates we had. And then we were struggling which one to choose because there is extensive workup involved for any one of these markers. So we ran a small pilot of about 50 cases. And in that pilot, we found based on RNA-ish as well as genomic evaluation that CRIM63 amongst those three candidates did the best. And that is how we decided to work up CRIM63 specifically for MITF-RCC and then expand it to a larger cohort of about maybe 180 cases or so.
So we'll get to the details of the design. So you did basically RNA-seq on these cases. And you found what is overexpressed, what is a top candidate overexpressed in the type of tumor that you're looking out for, which is in this case the MITF. So share with us how, because like you said, just because a marker is overexpressed, it doesn't mean it's going to translate into on the bench on a day-to-day to a good marker that is sensitive and specific. Is there an element of luck or what do you go by? You mentioned like the three top.
You could have
selected the second or third. So share with us if it's possible.
Yes.
Some clues to how you zoom in on one out of the three.
Yeah, that's a good and challenging question. We struggled ourselves. And you're actually right. It is tough to predict. Sometimes even the top nominated markers don't pan out, and I think you are also very well aware of that, like you just said. What we tried to do is we ran a small pilot where we ran all these three markers on RNA using RNA in situ hybridization or RNA-ish utilization technology. On about 50 cases, and in which we had a small subset of MITF-RCC and a small subset of all other cases. We also looked for expression in background benign kidney. So using this small pilot, we were able to figure out that TRIM63 is the most specific in terms of getting overexpressed in MITF-RCC. And in our pilot, we almost saw no expression in any of the other kidney cancer subtypes. But the other two markers which we did, while they were expressed in MITF-RCC, we also saw few other cases of other subtypes getting some expression levels. And that is when we thought that, okay, based on this pilot, it seems like this is likely the best candidate. So there was, we can say it was a calculated move we made, and thankfully it panned out. But yeah, it is definitely tricky. It's definitely not easy.
Excellent. So let's move then to the design of the specific. How many cases in total you did, and did you do it on TMA, whole sections, or what have you?
Yes. So we had a subset of cytogenetically confirmed cases, which I think we were about 30 or 31 cases, which included all three genomically now categorized subsets of MITF-RCC, which, like you know, includes TFE3 translocation kidney cancer, TFEB translocation kidney cancer, and the recently identified TFEB amplified renal cell cancer. So we wanted to include all three subsets. And these three subsets are well represented in our cohort. We also had another cohort of cases, which was clinically, morphologically, or immunophenotypically considered to be suspicious for MITF-RCC and then underwent FINCH interrogation. And that was another subset we used. And then we had a long list of cases where we wanted to make sure that these cases don't express CRIM63. For example, we had clear cell RCC, papillary RCC, chromophobe RCC, some syndromic RCC, which can sometimes be overlapping, like you know, in morphologic features with MITF-RCC. So we wanted to have a good distinct subset of that.
So I mean, the problem in renal cell, the more it's good that it's molecular driven classification that we're moving toward, but in this, because really on morphologically, it's becoming, there is so much overlap in morphology that we find ourselves like everybody else doing a lot of stains and a lot of fish.
Yeah. So yeah, we are guilty of the same. So.
Tell me about the 70 cases that sounds like fell in that category. So these are the 70 that for some reason, either immuno or morphology, you thought you have to rule out translocation. So these, I take it all of them turn out to be not translocation carcinomas?
So the way we divided these cases were when we ran FISH on these cases, a subset of these cases indeed turned out to be positive for MITF genes. And I think there were about maybe 16 cases, but the majority were negative, like 49 or so were negative for, like you're saying, for FISH aberrations. And then we had three indeterminate cases where based on FISH, actually we could not decide, is it a positive case or a negative case? So all the 16 positive cases for FISH were also positive for TRIM63. Interestingly, amongst the 49 cases which were negative for FISH, 8 turned out to be positive for TRIM63, which we were surprised at. And 2 out of 3 indeterminate cases were positive. We were able to look at a small subset of these surprising cases. And in one of those cases, which we were able to look at, there was a low-level TFEB amplification, which could probably explain why we were seeing TRIM63. Very interestingly, we did do sequencing for one more case where tissue was available, which was FISH negative, and we actually found a novel gene fusion for TFE3 in that case. So apart from these, in the previous 31 subset of cases, which
are well defined.
Yes, and there were 2 cases which were FISH negative, and they had the so-called cryptic intrachromosomal fusion of RBM10 with TFE3. But both of them were positive for TRIM63 in a very strong, homogeneous, and diffuse fashion. So I think we got encouraged by these results because it seemed to us that we were not only picking up FISH positive cases, we were also picking up cases which maybe FISH is missing, maybe for different reasons. One of those could be intrachromosomal fusions, some intrachromosomal fusions or intrachromosomal translocations, which, like, you know, sometimes FISH cannot pick up. And we were able to pick up those by TRIM63.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Excellent. So what is the calculated sensitivity and specificity? So it's good to know that in these difficult cases, trim seems to work, but overall?
Overall, based on the cutoff we use, which is a ROC curve-based kind of analysis, we came out with a cutoff. We use an H score, which is one of the ways or a semi-quantitative way of assessing RNA-ish based gene expression. And on our H score, which was 168, based on this cutoff, we had an overall sensitivity of about, I would say, 90% or so. And actually specificity was close to 100% based on this cutoff, which we felt was, I know this is not thousands of cases, but based on the cases we did in this cohort, we were happy to see that there was a high, more than 90% sensitivity and specificity for this marker.
So the issue becomes then using H-score. That's not something we use day to day in our analysis for immuno. We don't count number of positive with intensity and so how do you see this translating if we wanted to, you know, this become usable in standard laboratories? Are most of the cases either black and white, positive or negative for TRIM, or explain to us
That's a great question. And I think that is where advent of new molecular technologies also becomes a deliberation element. Because most pathology labs, most surgical pathologists are very comfortable with immunohistochemistry. And you're right, we generally don't use a product score in those. But I feel most of us still do, in our heads at least, some sort of a semi-quantitative assessment for protein expression as well. Right. When we call something focal or moderate or strong, we are sort of signing a number. I feel RNA-ish is becoming a more and more utilized technology in different labs. I believe it is already available in most of tertiary hospitals. Some bigger community hospitals, private labs are also adopting it. It does come with a small element of training where we have to get used to these RNA signals, where each signal actually, or each brown dot represents an RNA transcript, which I find fascinating that we are able to actually visualize an RNA transcript under the microscope. I just love this phenomena. And how many dots we see, that essentially translates for us to an H score. So there is a small amount of calculation involved, but it is doable. And we do this now on a daily basis. So we are getting used to it, but it does come with a little bit training element. I will make one comment though. We tried several antibodies for TRIM63, and the ones we tried actually did not give us good results, which would let us move forward. So we did try that. And I think now it's possible there are more antibodies out there, because TRIM63 gene is what codes for the TRIM63 protein. It's also called MURF1, MURF1 protein. It is known to be involved in muscle homeostasis. At that point, we did not see good antibodies, but RNA-ish worked out really very well for us. So I think this is a good technology for labs to keep on the radar and try to incorporate in their daily practice.
And I guess the next study will be reproducibility inter-observer, right?
Yes, absolutely.
What you're calling positive or negative. So,
yes. I think, So definitely that is something down the line which will be needed. Absolutely.
And do you see a role in general, not just for TRIM, in general, if we're going to start using RNA-ish, a role for digital image analysis and all that in helping us in quantification and classification of positive, negative?
I do think that is coming as well. I feel that especially with advent of AI, I think it is there in GU world, especially prostate world, it is out there. And I think modern pathology has had some great publications recently in terms of both AI as well as in realm of.
Thank you for the plug. We'll take it.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And I think especially in terms of genitourinary cancers, I think I know there are three platforms, AI-based platforms already, which are now offering prostate biopsy interpretation aids, which are all AI-based. A lot of Ki-67 counting tools are there, AI-based. So I feel initially, probably there will be some digital pathology kind of platform which could help pathologists do this. And I'm hoping AI can come up with something like that as well. Having said that, I still feel while there is a small learning curve in assessing RNA-ish, it is not something which pathologists cannot handle on a day-to-day basis. It is not very time-consuming. It does take some focus, obviously, but that is part of what we do. And it is definitely doable, but can get complemented by digital and AI pathologists.
Excellent. One last question. So you mentioned the sequencing. So in general, in translocations or in kidney, I know we're using Archer technology here. Is that what you're using for translocations in general, or you solely rely on FISH?
Our clinical, in our MLabs-based clinical enterprise, we are doing FISH-based only. We have the break apart strategy for both TFE3 as well as TFEB genes. And using the same break-apart strategy for TFEB, we are also able to evaluate for TFEB amplification. Renal cell carcinoma, which, like you know, is not like the best way, because the best gene amplification is determined through locus control probes. But somehow our field has evolved and utilized TFEB break-apart for ease, the same probe set for amplification as well. So in our clinical enterprise, we do have only currently TFE3 and TFEB FISH-based analysis. Having said that, we are able to perform deep sequencing under our MyOncoSeq initiative. And so we can do a very comprehensive analysis at the DNA, RNA level using that that methodology. Also, in our clinical molecular genetics lab, I think we are currently in the process of bringing on TFE3 as well as TFEB sequencing-based gene fusion analysis as well.
Excellent. Well, Rohit, thank you very much, and keep up the great work. Since the days you were a resident or fellow, you contributed to the field, and we're all thankful to your work and diligence, and it's been a pleasure to have you, and I'm sure our authors enjoyed this.
Thank you very much, George, for the good word. I think you and a lot of GU gurus have taught me a lot, and I always look forward to learning more. And I think I would just take this opportunity also to thank my collaborators at University of Michigan, especially my colleagues, Mindy, Rahul, Arul, Mohan, I think, and our other members at Department of Pathology and MCTP. I think without which this would not be possible. And also our inter-institution collaborators from John Hopkins, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, and all other collaborators and friends. I think without which I think it's a village which needs a village to do these kind of studies, and I'm very grateful for their collaboration. Thank you very much.
Very well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.